Ladies and gentlemen, step right up.
January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example. We will shine for everyone to follow. There should be no fear. We are protected, and we will always be protected. We will be protected by the great men and women of our military and law enforcement. And most importantly, we will be protected by God. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the Earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Let's go see our friends. When I'm a roll of honey.
This is Christopher Hart with your American Adversaries Second Helping Podcast, where we offer you up a sample of our American Adversaries radio show, which you can listen to live Sunday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on our station's website, theanswerorlando.com, or live or from the archive from our website, americanadversaries.com, and on our Rumble channel, American Adversaries. On our Monday show, sponsored by Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, its founder, Lori Cardoza Moore, Rick Brown, John Barros, and I spoke with our man in Jerusalem, Abe Katzman, about the current situation in Gaza as the Israeli Defense Forces are rooting out Hamas and the geopolitical ramifications of the conflict.
Yes, indeed. That music does mean that it is time to tune in with Abe Katzman, who's joining us live from Jerusalem. Abe, how's things over there tonight?
Well, in Jerusalem, they're okay. Other parts of the country are, there's a little more action going on.
All right. Well, I want to ask you, or actually Lori wants to ask you about some action that went on over here with some poll results.
Yeah. Abe, have you seen the Harvard-Harris poll that was taken?
I saw, you'd better remind me.
Oh,
I know
okay.
That I saw it, but it was, bad news.
Let me refresh your memory. We were just talking about this and how shocking these numbers are. The results of the poll, 60% of the 18 to 24-year-olds that were polled believe that the October 7th terror attack was justified by Palestinian grievances.
And there's a number of other questions with similar results. Perhaps the most astonishing one was a similar margin of these individuals think that gays can live openly and happily in Gaza. Mm. Abe?
Well, let them try. Maybe they're right. Maybe not. There's only one way to find out.
Yeah, they should go check it out.
I think the last guy that tried wasn't around to tell us how it turned out.
Right.
But did that make any news over there, or is it just too, is it with the war going on and everything, is it just?
No, it was, I did see it. So it was there was some headline about it. I think it's just, you know, there's a steady drumbeat of this sort of thing. And we keep on seeing just this one form of hostility toward Israel or to Jews directly after another. And, I mean, really, the numbers are just becoming, they're kind of staggering.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, my own synagogue from when I was living in Washington, D.C. for a while, somebody came in, was spraying a substance of some type and yelling to gas the Jews.
Oh, jeez.
That went along with 199 swatting incidents, what they call swatting incidents, which is where you either call up the police and claim that there's an active shooter or a bomb threat or something along those lines. 199 over the weekend.
And that the reason that is to get the police to raid that person's house.
Correct.
And perhaps arrest them or get into a confrontation that might turn violent. And this is ridiculous. And then I guess you saw the three so-called college presidents, I say so-called because they shouldn't be, who wouldn't condemn anti-Semitism on their campuses. It had to be in context, as they put it.
Well, great minds like those can see nuances that simple people like us cannot, apparently.
Evidently.
So we're being very hard on them, bringing them down to our common sense standards when they understand all kinds of subtle meanings in these words. Mm. So, they're pretty good representatives of the institutions that they're representing.
Yeah.
One of them resigned. One of them didn't resign, got caught up in a plagiarism scandal.
And it's still there.
And it's still there. Yeah. Amazing.
All right. Well, what you just said, I think that might be the beginnings of another article by you if you feel the tingle in your fingers. All right. We'll be right back with Abe Katzman, the American Adversaries. This hour being brought to us by Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, PJTN.org. Our man, Abe Katzman, coming to us live from Jerusalem. And, Abe, you mentioned earlier that it's kind of quiet there, but not so elsewhere in the country. Can you give us, like, the 10-mile-high view of things going on right now?
Well, 10 miles over Jerusalem, it's a lovely night. 10 miles over Gaza, it's a little more active. 10 miles over Lebanon and, in fact, over Syria. And we've got some activities. There are skirmishes going on there. Apparently there was a fair amount of firing from Syria. Each time this sort of thing happens, Israel hits back. But Israel doesn't want to, they'd hit back a lot harder if they didn't have their hands full in Gaza.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
and one of the reasons they still have their hands full in Gaza is, unfortunately, because of all the political pressure, not to allow them to really win a crushing victory.
And is it also putting IDF soldiers at risk for more and more ambushes?
Yeah. The numbers, who knows? If you can really draw the line, but it sure looks that way. That since pressure was put on the Israeli military to do less bombing, or I'm sorry, as the president calls it, less indiscriminate bombing.
Right.
Oh boy, that is an offensive term.
Yeah.
So with all the with less of that, and they're putting more. They've got these. They're losing a lot of special forces and elite combat soldiers.
Mm.
There have been since October 7th, since the military operation began, there have been 129 combat deaths.
Mm.
in Israel. Coincidentally, there are also currently 129 hostages. You can, you know, make your own whatever analogy you want to make there, but it's you know, it's interesting. That's a lot, but it's a lot of people. And these are these tend to be professional soldiers. They're reserves, very well trained reserves, and these are people with families. It means that out of the 129, I bet probably half of them have left widows and orphans.
Meanwhile,
one person, and it you know, it's a small country. I always tell you, people know other people. My my one of my brother's very close friends lost a son. He happened to be a father of six, and he was killed last week in action.
Boy,
so our government is over there. Dictating? Is that what is that what Lloyd Austin is doing today?
Well, yes and no.
Playing armchair?
They're continuing to play, to kind of talk out of both sides of their mouth. He comes and he makes a big deal about we're not setting any timeline for Israel. And he's but he also calls for an increase in aid to Gaza, which so far has been hijacked by Hamas.
Yep.
He's here pushing for the two-state solution, which I wish they'd just leave alone. Why is that the most isn't the most important thing now just the military mission? What are you trying to worry about? What the political what's off on the political horizon? We don't even know what things are going to look like when this is over. And again, also. They've been harping on these, you know, these imaginary West Bank extremist settlers they keep on talking about.
Oh, I heard about them. They can't get arms. They're afraid that if they give arms to Israel, those arms are going to fall into the hand of those wascally settlers.
Yeah.
My gosh.
This is turning into something that is really worrisome. And that is that they are looking, the U.S. is apparently looking to block entry into America of people that it considers to be extremist settlers. And the U.K. is going to follow suit.
Oh, my gosh.
But there's no list. There are no standards. It just seems to be the kind of thing that they can rather arbitrarily put people on a list. And it's a way of it's really a backdoor way of pressuring Israel to adopt the their beloved two-state solution. All of these things, the thing with the extremist settlers and the indiscriminate bombing, this is really bothering a lot of people here. They find the accusation, they find the implication downright offensive. And while there is great appreciation for what America provides to Israel in order to survive militarily, the political support is kind of, you know, giving with one hand and taking back with the other. It's not good. Plus, from an American standpoint, you know, they're playing with fire here, doing this sort of thing. The sorts of I don't know, these invented standards that they have now first time invented, applying only to Israel, will come back one day, probably soon, to bite the U.S. Because people are going to be able to say, yeah, that's your standard. Whatever they do, it's going to be considered indiscriminate bombing. They're not going to be doing enough to save civilians. These are preposterous things to say without giving any detail. What does that even mean? They keep on saying too many civilians have been killed. We don't know how many civilians have been killed.
Exactly.
B, what's the right number?
Right. Hmm. Right. And this pressure by the United States, it kind of reminds me of that quote by, you know, remember Rahm Emanuel? never let a crisis go to waste.
Yep.
Because, and there was the second part of that, is because you can accomplish what you couldn't get done otherwise.
That's right.
And and here they are right at it. And of course, it just complicates the matter and makes it more difficult for the Israelis. And I dare say, if there are civilians being killed, it's because, the Israelis aren't allowed to go in there and do this as quickly and as effectively as possible. And that's the bottom line here. Now, also, I guess Hezbollah is continuing the skirmishes up north. And did I see a report where they're kind of using UN troops as human shields? Did I get that right?
Well, why not? If you can use UN schools and nurseries and kindergartens and parks, why not use a compound, a UN compound? So yeah, they started firing from very close to a UN facility. The hope, kind of the obvious hope, is that Israel hits back,
right,
or tries to hit back. Whatever they hit back with goes slightly astray and hits the UN force. That's what Hezbollah is looking for here. By the way, the fact that Hezbollah is operating right next to where the UN troops are. Remember, the whole point of the UN troops is to keep Hezbollah
right
out of South Lebanon and to keep South Lebanon demilitarized.
Right.
And, it's comical.
Right.
But it's also something to keep in mind anytime you hear somebody suggest that the solution for Gaza is some kind of international force, some kind of UN force.
Yeah, it's farcical.
Don't go that way.
No.
Yeah. And then we hear the stories about how the UN forces often commit atrocities of their own.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. No solution there. And then you have what's going on in the Red Sea. Evidently, ExxonMobil has announced now they're not going to send ships through the Red Sea. I guess they're going to go around the Horn of Africa to make their shipments back and forth. What's the story there? I mean, the United States is intercepting these cruise missiles and drones, but they're not really responding yet again, Abe.
By the way, it's them. It's a bunch of shipping companies, British Petroleum also. So far, only about 2% of the traffic has opted to not enter the Red Sea, but that number is going to rapidly increase. That seems to be the trend.
If I'm not mistaken, that's one of the busiest shipping lanes in the world. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right.
Yep.
That's what's required. I mean, this is all stuff that goes toward the Suez Canal.
Right.
And that supplies Europe. It supplies all the Mediterranean
countries.
There is a worldwide economic impact of doing this. And yet, first, you know that Iran and the Iranian Republican Guard is the proper return address for this stuff. And I have no idea what the U.S. is waiting for, but it is very frustrating to watch this happen. How do they just allow it? Even if you're intercepting, the drones and the rockets, you're not going to get all of them.
Right.
Second, the cost is prohibitive of doing things that way, because the drones are a fraction of the cost of the interceptors that are used.
Yep.
That the U.S. or that its allies will use to take out these either the missiles or the drones, you're talking about affecting worldwide shipping.
And
how is this supposedly helping the Palestinians anyway?
Right.
I'm curious about that.
And you would think that the United States knows exactly where these things are being launched from, unless they're on mobile launchers, and then even then they can track them, I'm sure.
Sure.
Some Predator drones.
We're not dealing with the Chinese military here.
Right.
It's not the North Koreans.
Yeah.
The U.S., this aversion to using any of its power is going to, the truth is, it's going to get very expensive in many ways, both cost and lives, cost, economic cost, because they are, every time they let one of things, these types of things go with no response, whatever level of deterrence they have is chipped away that much more.
Well, after 110
and
times.
Not having any deterrence is a very expensive way to try to try to defend yourself.
I said after 110 times now, there is no deterrence anymore.
I think it's a lot more than that, but it continues.
So, yes, Abe, I have a question. How is the environment in Israel with all of the trauma from the war? And, you know, when you compare that to where Israel was a couple of months ago with judicial reform, is there, what's going on behind the scenes? Is there collaboration, more of a collaborative effort between the two different factions in Israel?
Yeah, there is at least the appearance, and I think it's more than appearance, of a great deal of unity here. People from across even the religious spectrum. There's all this, there are a lot of people, for example, in the ultra-Orthodox community who, for religious reasons, don't go, it's whatever, the philosophical reasons, they don't join the Israeli military. And many of them have now been joining. There is a feeling that this requires it. And that's very good for cohesion. At the same time, you kind of see, you know, there are still protests. They'll find some. They'll always find something to protest about. In this case,
it's the hostages.
The government is not supposedly not doing enough to bring the hostages back.
Right.
So what are you? You know, you're protesting the government. Mm-hmm. How about protesting at the Red Cross headquarters?
Right.
And in fact, what is the U.S. doing to try to get its hostages, to get all hostages back? It's the other thing that drives me crazy here is that the U.S. just seems to ignore the fact that it's got 10 of it, what it had 30 citizens, I think 30 citizens killed on October 7th.
Right. Yeah.
And there are 10 of the hostages, 10 of them are U.S. citizens. Mm-hmm. Where is the U.S.?
Yeah.
Well, evidently they sent the CIA director to try to work out a deal. I thought the State Department would be the – aren't they the ones that worked out the first deal? Of course, I know it took us the so-called ceasefire, but the CIA director kind of doesn't seem like the right guy for the job. He would be the guy I'd send over there to figure out how you go in there with a special operations to get him out, Abe.
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I mean – In the Israeli government, people can wear several hats, and so the fact that the Mossad director is, who is considered a very capable guy, so he's tasked with this. Okay, that makes sense. But in the U.S. government, people stay in their own lanes. At least they're supposed to. So you're right. I don't know why it's, of all people, the CIA director. I'm not sure what the implications of that are. But at the same time, I don't like the fact that we're, you know, that I'm not sure what we're negotiating. I'm not sure what we're willing to concede, how we're willing to reward these atrocities. And they're talking here about how, again, nobody knows whether this is really what's going on. But they've been meeting in Warsaw, and apparently the discussion involves the release of a bunch of senior Palestinian security prisoners.
Yeah, boy, that makes a lot of sense.
Why are what are they doing? We didn't learn our lesson with Gilad Shalit.
I guess not. Meanwhile, the tunnels, evidently they're going to be filled with seawater. Is that right? Is that the solution for the tunnels?
It's one solution.
Okay.
And I don't know if they're doing it everywhere. I don't know, in fact, if they're getting pushback against using it, using seawater.
Oh, yeah.
They're
talking about it over here. It's going to contaminate the water supply, and it's going to do this and that. to the environment, that sort of thing.
Right.
But it also would destroy those tunnels or make them unusable. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been videos coming out of the last couple of days of inside these tunnels. And one of them is one of the Palestinian leaders driving through. And he's got a nice car, by the way, from the looks of it. Driving, and it's, you would think he's in the tunnel or something like that. It's sort of a smaller version, but very, very elaborate. Mm. And somebody pointed out.
Yeah, that was done, actually. The person in charge of that one was the brother of Sinwar, who's kind of the on the ground commander of Hamas, as opposed to all the guys who were in Qatar. Yeah. So he's the one who's supposedly there, and his brother, who I'm not sure if the brother is a billionaire or not. I don't know. Maybe he's kind of the James Biden of Hamas. But he, he's the one who was in charge of this massive tunnel, and you can move a lot of stuff through there.
Yeah. One last question for you, Abe, and then we'll let you go. Elon Musk is going to be investigated by the European Union because of war content on X. What in the world is that all about? I know they're all out to censor everybody, but what is this?
Well, they're out to harass him. Because he has not been playing ball the way they want him to. Had it been a couple of years ago, they would have done whatever he wanted. But once he became a real advocate for free speech, they had a problem with that. So they're accusing him of breaching his obligations to counter illegal content and disinformation. There's something called the Digital Services Act, which I think they just passed a while ago, and I think this may even be a big test case
for it. It's the first application of it, from my understanding.
This is heavy-handed.
Did they give any specific examples of – because it seems to me the disinformation is coming from Hezbollah and Palestinian supporters and sources. Unless they're holding them responsible for that.
You're not thinking in the same postmodern way that they are in terms of what constitutes evidence.
Right.
All they have to do is accuse him of, even though he says that they're complying, it's like the Biden accusation. They failed to do enough to counter it.
Right.
So with standards like that, you pick your target and you punish whoever you want to punish.
Yep. It's the, what'd you call it, postmodern mindset there? Yeah, it's way beyond me. Well, Abe, we'll let you go. I know you've been a little bit under the weather, but thank you so very much.
Yeah. I'm glad the voice held out pretty well, even if it wasn't as deep and resonant as usual.
It still got the message across.
Yeah, I thought Seb Gorka was on the phone.
Very effectively. So we love you, and take care of yourself.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Merry Christmas to all you guys.
And you.
Thank you.
And our condolences to your brother's friend who lost the best son. Okay. All right. Very good.
Yep.
Okay, we will take a break. By the way, you can find Abe at his website, abekatzman.com, Katzman spelled with an S, or on Facebook or LinkedIn. Okay, don't forget this hour of the show is being brought to us by Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. You, too, can be a part of the solution, but not by sitting around doing nothing. Please go to pjtn.org and join up. Be a part of the solution. We'll be right back. Also on Monday, John Barrows filled us in on the latest goings-on at the abortion mill in downtown Orlando. All right. In the meantime, Big John.
Yes, sir.
How are things down to the terrace?
Oh, they're going. They're going like always. We've had a couple of good encounters with them this week, though. We had it was the strangest thing. We caught a time when they were deciding to just take pictures of each other out there.
You talking about the carnies?
Yeah, and they were doing dances and all that kind of thing. And finally, two ladies, not together, but one at a time, came running out the door and said, "We're not doing this. I'm not doing this," and just got out of there and left and took the information and went over to Choices.
They did.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
So that was pretty powerful.
And are you getting help down there?
I am getting help. Also went to a church yesterday, a new one that's St. John's Prez out in West Orange High School. And they were very open to wanting to get in the fight. It was truly beautiful. And mm-hmm. I just hope this keeps happening and work my way right out of a job.
And by the way, you can follow John on his Facebook page. That's John Barros, B-A-R-R-O-S, John Barros with two R's. And it continues to flummox and frustrate the carnies, right, to see these women come out?
Oh, they can't stand it, because every day they'll just lie and say, you know, you guys have never saved everyone, yet we're seeing people that God has saved every day choose life and get out of there. And so when they do actually see it, it's much harder for them to deny it and to stay where they stay.
Right, right, right. And what during the holidays, is it business as usual down there?
It is. And unfortunately, New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve are a very usually pretty busy. Sometimes not, but usually are.
Yeah. Well, this year they'll fall on the weekend, but I presume then the days leading up to that,
right,
would be busy.
Yep.
And in the meantime, the legislature goes back into session in January. I don't believe they have anything on the docket, do they? As far as because right now it's up in the air with the 6-week ban. Right.
That's right. And the
15-week
ban and the whatever ban. We just need to get rid of it.
All right. But you sent me an article about there was a Republican woman who was a chair of an executive committee, not in a local county, but in a county here in Florida.
Right.
That was basically bragging that she was getting Republican women to sign a petition to get a right to abortion amendment on the Florida ballot in November.
That's right. And they were getting more people than they could ever imagine.
More Republicans.
Republicans, I mean, than they could ever imagine. And what I'm hoping and praying is that people will wake up, because the way this, I wish I had it in front of me, but the way this is drawn up, it makes it sound like women are getting cheated by some kind of medical discrimination, when in fact that's not what's going on. And it's just a flat-out abortion bill. And we need the people to wake up.
Yeah. What John is talking about is they've cloaked it in the language of women's health rights. Mm-hmm. And this, by the way, is being challenged by Ashley Moody, the state attorney general, and currently is, I think they've already had the arguments at the Florida Supreme Court, because they have to decide if the language is acceptable for what they're actually trying to do.
That's right.
So it's even if they get all the petition signatures, and they still need, I think, several hundred thousand more.
Right.
But even if they get all the petition signatures, that does not guarantee it will be on the ballot, but it is a big hurdle to overcome to get it on the ballot.
Right.
And, of course, the Democrats want it on the ballot, thinking that it's going to bring more Democrats to the polls next year. I think they're pretty well convinced that Florida, in terms of the presidential race, is going to go Republican. But I think they got their eyes set on Rick Scott because he's up for re-election next year. And every one of his elections that he's won, the two as governor and the one for the Senate, Rick, have all been with, I think, 30,000 votes, weren't they?
It's been really close.
Yeah. All three of them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So they see him as perhaps a vulnerable target, and if they can get enough people out on this issue, that perhaps they could sway that election there. By the way, there is another amendment they're trying to get onto the ballot, and that would have to do with recreational use of marijuana. Once again, the thinking being that this will bring out the voters who will be otherwise inclined to vote for Democrats.
Right.
So both of these issues bear watching. But, yeah, it was pretty astonishing. By the way, she is no longer the chairman of that executive committee. But nonetheless, It is kind of astonishing, but that's, you know, the power of the language. The left knows how to use the language, especially when it comes to this issue, because it is an extremely emotional issue, as you see every day.
Yes, sir. And it's like Rush Limbaugh used to say. He would say, words mean things.
Indeed. Indeed they do. And the Democrats, they know how to manipulate the words. And, you know, we oftentimes are frustrated or hear people frustrated that they can, you know, they control the argument, they control the narrative. It's because they know how. It's because they make that emotional appeal. Everything that the Democrats do is based on an emotional appeal. I don't care if it's the most arcane economic, you know, issue that, you know, taxing trucks or something, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's because, you know, they're destroying the environment or whatever. They will always come up with an emotional reason to back their policies. And as John just said, as L. Rush Fuzzbo, those words, because they grab you, right? I mean, we're in the business of using language to get a point across. And, you know, the Republicans just don't understand the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. Trump does, and Trump innately gets it. I don't think that he sits down and articulates in his mind that politics is like professional wrestling. He just knows that it is, right? And he knows how to work that audience. He knows how to play that game. And Republicans, very few of them have gotten that. But anyway, you can follow John on his Facebook page. He's also down there on Lucerne Terrace. He's not down there every day, but you're going to be down there a couple of days this week, maybe?
Yeah, I plan on being there 4 days a week, Tuesday through Friday.
Okay. Down there on Lucerne Terrace, just off Gore, and just south of downtown proper down there. So if you are inclined to go by, you can always say some prayers. Many prayers for John as you can be saying to help him out down there, because right. He's definitely walks into the halls of evil every day down there to bring people out of there. So with God's word, that's what does the trick. On our Wednesday show, Mike McBath and I spoke with author and cryptocurrency expert Kevin Freeman about his latest book, Pirate Money, which offers up an alternative to government-backed digital currencies. And I want to talk to a gentleman right now. This man is a very accomplished author. He's written numerous books. He's known as the father of liberty, security, and values investing. And he's an expert, I should say, on money and currency. And they may not necessarily be the same thing. And we're going to talk to him about his most recent book, Pirate Money: Discovering the Founder's Hidden Plan for Economic Justice and Defeating the Great Reset. So we'd like to welcome to the show today Kevin Freeman. Kevin, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks you for having me. Well, Merry Christmas.
And same to you. Thank you very much. And by the way, Kevin is also a member of the Cherokee tribe, a citizen of the Cherokee tribe.
Very nice. Very unique.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. Kevin, is there a difference between money and currency? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, well, money is biblically, historically, every other way you look at it, it's gold and silver, sometimes copper, but always gold and silver. Currency is what we use daily. Federal Reserve prints up notes. There's digital forms of it. But the currency of the United States today is not based in precious metals, much to the chagrin and the rolling over in their graves of our founders. It is based on the full faith and confidence in the United States government, which unfortunately ebbs and flows and is right now at a low point.
Yeah, you actually has pictures of modern-day currency in mm-hmm. his book, and these are Federal Reserve notes. This isn't real money, per se.
No, that's correct. It's real money, again, is gold and silver. From a biblical standpoint, God looks at paper money that's not backed by anything. When you're dealing with the United States government, the largest buyer of goods and services on the planet, and they have a printing press, you're dealing with an unjust weight or measure. Right now, there's $34 trillion worth of debt that the government's piled up. Now, I'm not saying don't use the currency. I'm not trying to say, this isn't useful economically. It is, but it loses its value over time. And from 1971 to the present, every dollar has lost 87.5% of its purchasing power. So in 50 years, 7/8 of our money has disappeared.
And in fact, the bills, they're promissory notes. In other words, it's a debt obligation, correct?
That is absolutely correct. The bill is a debt instrument, and a note is a debt instrument. Go into the bond markets, and you buy treasury bills or you buy treasury notes. Those are promises from the government to pay you 3 months in the future or 30 years in the future. They're not actual money.
So what is pirate money?
Well, when our founders created wrote the Constitution, they said that a state should make nothing other than gold and silver coin legal tender within that state. Now, gold coin were known as gold doubloons, and silver coins were specific. It was a term, Spanish milled dollar, also known as a piece of eight or a peso. A Spanish milled dollar is where we get the term dollar. It wasn't an American term. It was a Spanish term. It referred to 0.7734 troy ounces of fine silver. And that Spanish milled dollar is what they consider to be a dollar. But if you think of gold doubloons and silver pieces of eight, what do you think of? You think of pirates. You think of Captain Jack Sparrow or Long John Silver or Blackbeard.
Right. Indeed. And by the way, they had their own. They were the ones who were trading in real money. In other words, they were the ones trading the gold and the silver even after the government started printing money. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the governments that print money, you know, Thomas Jefferson said, paper is poverty. They specifically intended to prevent the Congress from printing money because the Congress had done this in the Revolutionary War. They produced something called the Continental. The Continental was payable in silver or gold upon demand, except they didn't have the silver or gold to pay on demand. And so George Washington said that a wagon load full of Continentals wouldn't buy a wagon full of supplies. And that's why, again, all the founders hated paper money. And every chapter of Pirate Money has got a quote from a founder or something like that talking about how much they despised the idea of unbacked paper money.
You know, I want people to get the book because Kevin goes through how we got from there to here and where we need to go from here onward. But just a real quick synopsis, how is it that we got so messed up?
Well, it's over time, but the Civil War caused a serious problem because up until the time of the Civil War, money had to be backed by something. In the Civil War, they issued greenbacks, and after the Civil War, the Supreme Court ruled that greenbacks backed by nothing were completely unconstitutional. And what did Ulysses S. Grant do? He packed the court so he could get back the power to print money and have control of this. So, you know, I'm traditionally Republican, but I do not like what the Republican Grant did in that case.
Yeah, no doubt. Back that was after the, you know, during the Reconstruction period. Also, there were changes made in the 20th century, including Richard Nixon and taking us off the gold standard.
Oh, that's right. 1971, we'd had gold removed from our economy by FDR in 1933, where he confiscated all the gold, made it illegal to hold gold. But people, foreign nations still held gold in the United States, and they could exchange their dollars for gold until 1971, when Charles de Gaulle of France decided he wanted to cash in all the paper money they had. And Nixon saw that as a run on the bank, and so he closed the gold window, said it would be temporary. But again, from 1971 to the present, our dollar has lost 87.5% of its purchasing power. What cost a dime in 1971 costs over a dollar today. In fact, a Hershey's candy bar was a dime in 1971. I defy anyone to find a full-size Hershey bar for 10 cents today. There is a dollar or a dollar and a half or $2, depending on where you shop.
And by the way, that inflation showed up pretty much right away, and it haunted Jimmy Carter. He couldn't do anything about it, and neither could Ford, if I'm not mistaken, Kevin.
That's true, until Reagan came along with Volcker, and they essentially crashed our economy short-term to bring inflation down. The Volcker-Reagan recession brought us down to a more sound monetary position, which we violated starting in 2008 and 9 with the financial crisis and then with COVID and everything else, you know, we now have $34 trillion in debt. We're technically broke as a nation. It's almost impossible to imagine that we get out of this, which is why we created the option that we call pirate money. And there in Florida, the great legislator, Representative Bankston, has introduced legislation based on reading the book Pirate Money that could. It's House Bill 697 and House Bill 699. Doug Bankston and Senator Rodriguez, with support from Senator Baxley and Representative David Barrero, have brought forth legislation that could give those Florida citizens an optional gold or silver standard. It's not required, but you could use it instead of paper money if you wanted to, if this legislation passes. It really is innovative. It's based on the Constitution. And I explain all of the logic, reasoning, and court cases supporting it in the book Pirate Money.
Where can people get your book? On Amazon? Go ahead. Sorry.
Amazon, absolutely. PirateMoneyBook.com will link you to the Amazon page, or you can order them in bulk, which, you know, while I was in the at the governor's club in Tallahassee, and we had dinner with a bunch of the legislators, and they picked up copies of the book. I think 1/4 of your entire legislature now has a copy of Pirate Money and is reading it, maybe more than that. Citizens for Sound Money and others have joined in the fight to make Florida perhaps the world's leader in returning citizens to the gold standard. Tennessee, Utah, Texas, there are 20 states working on it now. And if people want to learn more, they can go to transactionalgold.com. And click on the Active States button to learn how it works and where it's being offered.
Kevin, where do you place Bitcoin into your, let's say, your placing of money? You know, is it in between? Does it have no value at all? Is it a waste of time? Where do you put it?
Well, first off, let me congratulate Bitcoin, because when it first came out, I thought, this is ridiculous. There's nothing behind it. But obviously, they built an infrastructure and took something that was worth pennies or less than pennies, and at one point was worth $60,000 a coin. Bitcoin, unfortunately, has the ire of the federal government against it. And so Bitcoin, which is a very novel idea because there's a limitation on the amount, it provides privacy, it provides a means of exchange. It could be money if a government adopted it. But the federal government would have to adopt it. I don't see that happening. They hate Bitcoin. They're trying to tax it and punish it every which way. But a state can't adopt it because Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution says that a state can make nothing other than gold and silver coin tender within the state. So what makes pirate money possible, which is transactional gold and silver, where you can deposit gold or silver in a Florida depository and then use a debit card and spend it, and the depository would keep track of it. You wouldn't be taxed on it, because it would be exempt from sales tax, and it, because it's money, functional money, and legal tender, it wouldn't even be taxed by the IRS. At least my non-accountant, non-lawyer view of things, which I wrote up in Pirate Money, would suggest that you could hold gold and silver as money and not have to pay capital gains tax. Check with your tax advisor. I don't give tax advice, but I really do believe that this is the perfect money system.
Kevin, Bitcoin doesn't have any intrinsic value, though, or anything like gold.
Bitcoin has universal shared value from the idea that people say it has value.
It's the same as fiat
money, the greenback. But its advantage over the paper money is there's a limit on the amount of it. It could be money. It's not money today. It probably never will be money, but it could be money if a government accepted it and adopted it.
All right. Of course, the big elephant in the room are the so-called central bank digital currencies, which you address in great detail in your book. And you also talk about the government debt in your book. You just mentioned, and the government, I think, just today announced that it went over $34 trillion, and it's growing at an astronomical rate. I don't see how we stop this growth because of the way they have been spending money. And you tie it into a great reset for the economy. Kind of address those things, if you would.
All right, let's start with the debt. Right now, the nominal interest rate, the Fed funds rate's 5 to 5.25%, and our debt's $34 trillion, which means that as soon as the debt catches up, it's going to be $1.7 trillion of interest only.
Right.
Well,
that,
that's
off the top of the federal budget. We've been talking
that's
about
right.
that. Yeah, go ahead, please.
That's right. So it's impossible to imagine addressing that. So what they're planning is a great reset, which is, well, every, you know, by the way, to put it in context, the entire consumer debt measured on credit cards, all of the credit card debt of all Americans just now hit a record, and it's $1.08 trillion. That means all the debt of all Americans on credit cards is about half of just the interest the Federal Reserve will start having to pay on debt. So it's just insane. So what they're going to do is they've already telegraphed it. They're going to have a financial reset of the economy. The goal of the World Economic Forum is to make it to where you own nothing and you're happy by the year 2030. And the reason you're happy is they're going to absolve the debt, but we're going to have to go on to an entirely internet-based digital system that has nothing behind it, where they have absolute complete control, and that's known as a central bank digital currency, where literally you don't own the money. You just have a software use license to use it, and if they don't like the way you're using it, they can shut it off. So you go to buy alcohol, and they say, no, 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 we've looked at your health records. You can't buy alcohol. Well, you want to go buy a soda, and you say, well, I want to do it. Oh, no, 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 you're overweight, just like in New York where they tried to ban anything more than 16 ounces of soda.
Yep.
Or you want to drive too many miles. No, 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 you shouldn't be using a gasoline-powered car. You want to buy the wrong foods. You want to travel the wrong place. You want to give to the wrong church. You want to do entertainment that they don't approve of. It's a nanny state on steroids where they can control every action you take by simply, when you show up to buy that gas-powered stove at the Home Depot and they run your card, no, your social credit score is not high enough. Therefore, we deny this purchase. But, of course, Hunter Biden will be able to buy all the gas-powered stoves that he wants, maybe hire some women, whatever he wants to do. Certain rules will apply to certain people, but not to everyone.
Yeah. And, of course, everybody will not – the way you describe it in the book is you won't even have an account. In other words, everything will basically be the government's, and they will be allotting things to you. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. You mentioned I'm Cherokee. If they wanted to come along and say, we want to give reparations to the Cherokee people, they could pull money from your account or make your dollars worth 0.75 and my dollars worth 1.5, which would be horrible and wrong. It's backwards, but that's diversity, equity, and inclusion. And by the way, when President Biden wrote up his executive order on this, he mentioned in there things like we have to protect the environment, stop climate change. We have to guarantee equity and inclusion. These are all written in what our money is supposed to do. Well, I don't want money that is progressive agenda. I want money that is neutral. I want my money to be good. I want Democrats' money to be good. I want everybody's money to be good and have fair playing field, fair system, and everybody be able to earn and keep what they earn. That's not what central bank digital currency. They can tax you if they snap your picture walking across the street. I was at AmFest with Charlie Kirk this past week. I admit I walked across the street of downtown Phoenix. There were no cars coming. The streets appeared to be blocked off, and they were. But if they snapped my picture and they said, hey, it doesn't matter if the streets are blocked off, you still jaywalk, they could find me right there. They could take it straight out of my digital wallet and pay it to the government.
How is pirate money going to stop that?
Well, first off, we have the piece of legislation in Florida, House Bill 697 and 699, would say that's your money. It's held in gold and silver only. You can transact in it. If people don't accept it, they don't do business in the state of Florida. You don't have to make small business take it. What you can do is have an alternative. So your treasurer takes gold and silver on deposit, or takes U.S. dollars on deposit, and then converts it to gold and silver at the citizen's request. And then you go and you eat at Macaroni Grill, and your bill turns out to be $60, which is approximately 1 gram of gold. They'll take 1 gram of gold out of your account and either give it to Macaroni Grill's account, or they'll sell it and give Macaroni Grill the cash. But the federal government has no say in it. Absolutely none, and there's court cases that specify that. that if a state makes gold and silver coin tender and makes it functional, the federal government has no control in that. I'm trying to think of which case it was. It may have been Lane County versus Oregon, where they said basically a federal court nor a Congress nor a regulatory agency can interfere with the state's right to use their power from Article 1, Section 10 and make gold and silver legal tender and functional money.
Kevin, how would you though regulate that? In other words, look at the fraud and everything associated with Bitcoin. So let's say we do what you say in a sense of gold and silver, you know, and we go from there. How do you actually watch the people who were in charge? Is it a government agency?
You mean the Florida, it would be the chief financial officer of Florida, and there's audit provisions put into the bill. Plus, you have the option of not doing it as a citizen, as opposed to you don't have an option right now on a Federal Reserve note, and you don't need any audit to make sure there's something behind it, because I can promise you there's nothing behind it, and they tell you that. There's no gold back there to give out. So it's better than the current system. It's headed the right direction. It's based in the Constitution. It is morally right under the biblical terms. And then you have to vote in good people in office. I like your governor now. I like your chief financial officer now. But if you've got to audit them and make sure that they're being accountable to the people, just like you have to with everything else.
Once again, you can get the book Pirate Money at piratemoneybook.com. Or just go straight to Amazon. And don't forget to check out transactionalgold.com as well. And you said there was a particular thing to look for when you go to that website?
Yeah, if you go up in the corner of transactionalgold.com, it says active states. There's a button up at the top, home, right. FAQs, active states. You can click on that. And if you want to, you can click on Florida, which is first listed among the states because you've already filed legislation, and you can read the legislation for yourself. We would love to have people supporting this in Florida. It is, I believe, better to have an option than not to have an option. We have 20 states pursuing this, and if Florida screws it up, then why not put your money in Texas or Oklahoma or Tennessee or Ohio or any other state that's doing it? That will hold people accountable. The state that does it best is the one that will get the most.
And by the way, we need to be on top of this because the legislative session begins in, 3 weeks. Kevin, I've got to take a break. Can you stay with me a few more minutes?
I'd love to.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back with Kevin Freeman, author of Pirate Money, Discovering the Founder's Hidden Plan for Economic Justice and Defeating the Great Reset. We'll be right back.
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you suffer with low energy, difficulty sleeping, digestive issues, frequent illnesses, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Heiss Health Clinic is for you. Hi, this is Renee Humphreys. At Heiss Health Clinic, we use holistic methods to balance your body so it can help heal itself. Call Heiss Health Clinic at 407-677-1660 or go online to drheiss.com so we can help you experience outrageous health.
We all know we can't avoid death and taxes. Here in Florida, we also can't avoid mold, mildew, and grime building up on our homes, businesses, carports, and sidewalks. When it's time for you to tackle that dirt and grime, call Deer Brothers Exterior Cleaning, D-E-E-R-E. They do it all from soft washing roofs to high-powered washing for those really tough jobs. No job too big or small. So when it comes time for you to deal with the mold, mildew, and grime, call Deer Brothers Exterior Cleaning at 407-978-8834. Leave the dirty work to them. 407-978-8834.
Thompson Jewelers is your Christmas shopping headquarters. Celebrating Christmas with your chance to win the $1,000 Christmas shopping spree. Register now at TheAnswerOrlando.com. Plus, get 44% off anything in the store with the Christmas coupon at TheAnswerOrlando.com.
A little saxophone.
Beautiful.
There.
We need some singing to this, you know, a little bit later, don't
you
think?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah. In the meantime, once again, we're speaking with the author of Pirate Money, Kevin Freeman. You need to get this book, ladies and gentlemen. Get plenty of them and hand them out because this is on the horizon, whether we like it or not. And you can go to piratemoneybook.com, piratemoneybook.com. Or find it on Amazon. Mike.
Yeah, Kevin, if you converted, let's say, a lot of your paper money into the gold program here in the state of Florida, obviously you would be susceptible to the gyrations in the price of gold. Is that not true?
Oh, it's absolutely true. But you're susceptible to the gyration
of the
prices of the U.S. dollar, mm-hmm. too. Right now, gas prices change every day. Yeah, mm-hmm. So, yes, that's absolutely true. And gold over time fluctuates, and it can fluctuate quite a bit in the short term. But if you bought a good man's suit in 1923, it would take 1 ounce of gold. If you buy a good man's suit today, an ounce of gold is, what, over $2,000. You buy a pretty good man's suit for that.
I would think
so. In fact, there's a website, pricedingold.com, where you can see house prices, you can see food prices, you can see all kinds as they priced in gold over time.
So in essence, gold has held its value, but our currency has not.
That's absolutely correct. And the same is true for silver over the long term, too. In 1923, 100 years ago, you could buy, for 10 silver dimes, you could buy 5 gallons of gasoline. Today, 10 silver dimes will still buy you 5 gallons of gasoline, but they have to be silver dimes, pre-1964 dimes. They're worth, those 10 dimes are worth about $2.50 each and give you $25 in Federal Reserve currency, which would buy you 5 gallons of gasoline in everywhere but communist states.
All right. One or two more questions here. We had a caller wanting to know, how does the fair tax, do you have any thoughts on the fair tax? And is taxing even an issue in what we're talking about here?
It is. Taxing is an issue if you pay capital gains tax on your gold holdings, which is the way it is now. Currently, if you bought gold in 1971 at $35 an ounce and it's right now over $2,000 an ounce, you say, wow, look at all the money I've made. And as soon as you sell that gold or transact in it, the IRS will say you owe a capital gains tax. Well, oh, at least it's long term. No, that doesn't matter because gold is considered a collectible. It's not considered a security. So the holding period doesn't matter. You'll be taxed at the highest possible capital gains tax rate for your income bracket.
All right.
Now, comment on the fair tax. I like any tax system that improves from where we are today. A fair tax, a flat tax, all of those, whatever you can politically get through, I will support because right now the tax system is being used to reward and punish behavior, which is interfering with the free market. I don't think that's a good thing to do. I think it'd be better to have a fair tax or a flat tax. The nuances there, people getting big debates on them. Just simplify it and lower my taxes. That'll make me happy.
Kevin, how realistically could we implement this type of program in the state of Florida, time-wise?
It can be implemented almost immediately. We introduced to the Florida reps that we met a current commercial transaction capability. It doesn't have the tax advantages. It's not legal tender. But right now today, you can send dollars into Glint or Kinesis or Lode. Those are three different companies. The one I've worked with is Glint. Jason Cousins is the CEO. You can send it right. You open an app on your iPhone and send the money out of your bank account or even off a credit card. They'll buy gold and hold it in Switzerland. And then you can send you a MasterCard, and you can transact business using the MasterCard. Now, I don't like it. I love it. I hate. There are two things I hate about it, not Glint's fault, not Lode's or whatever, and that is it's in Switzerland. It's not in the United States, or it's in the Cayman Islands. I want it here. I want to be able to write a check on it. I want to physically go up and say, give me my gold out and take my gold and hold it and play with it, stick it in the safe at home.
Right.
I want real physical gold I can see and touch. And the second thing is, it's not legal tender, therefore it is subject to the same capital gains tax. Every time I buy or sell, I have to pay a tax, capital gains tax. I don't like that. But the system works. It can be up and operating very soon in this next session. And like I mentioned, I think a quarter of the legislature met with me at the governor's club, and then we've had Citizens for Sound Money going and talking it up.
All right.
I think it can pass.
All right. Well, we got to go, but I'd like to have you back as the session begins and as it proceeds to keep an eye on this and see how it goes and how our listeners can help along the way. So thanks a lot for being with us tonight, Kevin Freeman.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Kevin Freeman, Pirate Money. You need to see this book. You need to read this book, and you need to hand it around to your friends, ladies and gentlemen, because the Great Reset is on the way, and we'll be right back.
We wrapped up the week on Patriot Home Funding Friday with Pierce Outlaw, Nostradamus, and I speaking with our legal expert, the publisher of Undoing Time magazine, Patrick McGarrow, about the Colorado Supreme Court ruling that President Trump is ineligible to be on the state's primary ballot, as well as charges that special counsel Jack Smith was illegitimately appointed. And on the line with us now is our legal expert and famed appellate attorney and now publisher of Undoing Time magazine, undoingtime.org is where you can get it. And if you go there today, you'll see a brand new article there, and it's entitled Colorado Supreme Court Denies Trump Ballot Access in Unprecedented Ruling. An excellent article it is, because it tells you what the case is really all about. Patrick McGarrow, how are you doing today?
Wonderful, thank you. And I would just want to extend my happiest, merriest wishes to you and your audience for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year before we get going, because, oh boy, are we going to get going with this.
All right, well, thanks. Same to you and your family, wife and children, and all your friends and colleagues as well. We appreciate that, Patrick. Appreciate your contribution to the show. Well, let's start with your article. This has to do, of course, with this, as you call it, rightfully so, unprecedented Colorado court ruling. You know, it seems like this whole year was full of contorted legal theories, charges, and now this ruling. Could this perhaps be the most contorted of them all?
It is, actually. And, you know, every time I say I've never seen anything like this before, and I swear I'll never see anything like this again, I'm constantly surprised. So the case is Anderson versus Griswold. It's out of the Colorado Supreme Court. And, you know, what I did in that article, and I think I want to do for your audience, is use some of the words of the judges themselves in these rulings to that really capture the spirit. And this is the majority opinion. And by the way, this is a 4-2-3 opinion. Every single one of those judges in the Colorado Supreme Court has been nominated and confirmed by a Democratic governor. So we will point that out. Three of them are firmly in Trump's corner, despite being Democrat appointees. But the majority opinion, the one that kicked Trump off the ballot, says in the beginning, quote, "We are mindful of the magnitude and weight of the question now before us. We are also cognizant that we travel in uncharted territory and that this case represents several issues of first impression," meaning unprecedented. Everything this year started off with unprecedented things about Donald Trump, and we're ending the year with unprecedented things happening to Donald Trump. Dare I say there will be unprecedented things in 2024 also. What interesting times these are.
Wow. The dissenters were pretty scathing in their dissent, and I believe you quote them in there a couple of times, don't you?
I did, and actually, I had the privilege of arguing before Justice Damore in the Colorado Supreme Court in another unprecedented case years ago, and he is the main author of the main dissent, and his words were, I'm going to just read these words to your audience, right? "The decision to bar former President Donald J. Trump, by all accounts, the current leading Republican presidential candidate, and reportedly the current leading overall presidential candidate, from Colorado's presidential primary ballot flies in the face of the due process doctrine." He starts off his dissent by quoting a case from the United States Supreme Court from 1868 that cites the basic constitutional principle of due process of law, that a person cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property, or in this case, the right to hold public office, without due process of law, which means, at its most basic element, notice and a full and fair hearing where you can present evidence. Justice Damore goes into his decision about how Colorado's procedures have completely deprived Donald Trump of the basic due process of law. And this is from a Democratic appointee, so you know it's bad.
And also, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Constitution and its provisions are not federal statutes in the sense that you can be held liable, in this, like criminally liable, like if you violate, say, a bank robbery law or something like that. Because you point out in the article that there is a law against insurrection,
And Trump has not been tried or not been even charged with that, much less convicted of it. And so the Supreme Court can't just arbitrarily say he's guilty of insurrection. Correct?
That is correct, because if before somebody is found guilty or can be penalized for a conviction, there are basic due process principles, as you've just pointed out, that you have to go through. First, you have to be criminally charged. We do not live in Stalinist Soviet Union where simply a decree or an accusation equals a conviction. Once you are formally accused by a grand jury, then you have the right to things like challenging the sufficiency of the indictment. There's due process. Discovery, the right to exculpatory evidence that tends to favor the accused. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to be tried by a jury of your peers. The right to be tried only and have the prosecution held to a standard of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And the prosecution bears that burden. The burden never shifts to the accused. These are the basic due process principles that everybody in law school learns. And actually, dare I say, my high school kids are learning in their high school civics class. Thank you, Governor DeSantis. These are basic things that make up our fabric of American society.
Right.
And Justice DeMora says these are the things exactly that Donald Trump has been denied.
Patrick, even further, though, that this insurrection law itself presumably has standards that have to be met, basically a definition of what insurrection is, so that a prosecutor can prove in court that an individual has actually participated in such a thing. And it seems to me that this word is now being bantied about very subjectively.
That's correct. Okay, so when Congress enacts a statute that criminalizes certain behavior, they define every term in that law, which is supposed to give the average person like you and me notice, if you do this, bad things will happen to you, so don't do this, right? Insurrection is defined in the statute that criminalizes insurrection, okay? Insurrection is not defined in the Constitution. Congress took it upon themselves to do it as they are empowered to do. However, the Colorado Supreme Court acknowledges that Donald Trump has not been charged with insurrection, nor has he been convicted, but in their opinion, in the absence of any evidence at a hearing, they've decided by decree that this man is guilty of a crime that he hasn't even been charged with.
Isn't that what Enmeron did, or whatever you call him up there in New York, to Trump and the judge, was it Beryl that just did it to
Beryl Howell, yeah.
Howell that just did it to Giuliani, just ruling, you know, caveat, they declare them guilty, now let's get on to the punishment phase. Isn't this the same thing?
It is the same deprivation of due process that we're seeing over and over and over again. And honestly, it's getting to be such a level that it's, again, unprecedented. However, I will say this, and this is the cynic in me, you know, having practiced law for 22 years, given up the practice of law because of what I saw, and seeking to expose this kind of nonsense. As my law partner Jamie used to say, if the average person knew how corrupt the system was, they would never submit to its authority. Here we are seeing this play out in real time to a very public figure. The fact that our system of justice is broken, and when the bad guys in the government, when the deep state, when they want to get you, they're going to get you, and they're going to violate every standard in the Constitution, every law that they can just to get you. It's nauseating, really.
Yeah, Patrick, and I was going to say this is more of a statement than a question. That's the Republicans' fault, because when the riot happened at the Capitol, the Democrats and the media immediately termed it as an insurrection.
And so did many Republicans.
And the Republican Party didn't back Trump, particularly leadership, McConnell and McCarthy, and didn't push back on it. And then McCarthy didn't push back on the January 6th committee and put real Trump supporters on there to combat this narrative. And then here we are with the lawfare picking up that term and using it against President Trump and all the January 6th protesters.
You know, that sounds like, Pierce, that sounds a whole lot like mob rule to me.
Yeah, indeed.
Not the rule of law, mob rule.
Yeah, indeed.
Right? All we need is a bunch of torches and pitchforks.
Yeah. All right. Let's. And by the way, this. How do you see this playing out at the Supreme Court? Because I mean, they could take the case immediately, or they could remand it to the federal courts back in Colorado. Could they not?
They could, and I think. I think the Supreme Court is not going to sidestep this. I think they're going to meet this head on because they can't remand it back to the federal court because this comes directly from a state court. This is a direct appeal.
I see.
From the Colorado Supreme Court to the United States Supreme Court. I think what I think is likely to happen is you're going to see a decision which may be very heavily tilted in Trump's favor because I think the justices in the Supreme Court are going to find that Colorado's procedures. Remember, this came as an election law challenge that is not a normal lawsuit. There are truncated procedures in place. There's basic processes in that are present in civil cases that do not exist in the election challenge. And I think you're going to see a pushback by a solid majority of the justices as to the insufficiency of the due process afforded to Donald Trump, just like they did with the Cake Baker case. Because right. If you look at the Masterpiece Bakery case, that came out of Colorado too.
Right.
And it was a deprivation of basic due process. I think they're going to find the same way, and I think it's going to be a 7-2 decision or an 8-1 decision. Or, you know, maybe even a 9-0 decision.
Yeah. Well, Ketanji Brown Jackson, she can't figure out if she's even a woman, so I wouldn't count on her vote for anything.
Her vote doesn't count, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Is it going to be, you know, normally the Supreme Court likes to have a very narrow decision. Do you think this will be broad enough that it'll include all the other states that are trying to do the same thing in one way, shape, or form?
Yes, and it has to. And if you read Justice Sotomayor's very, very well written, very well reasoned, and easy to follow dissent, and that is the entire decision, all 213 pages of that is embedded within the article that I posted on UndoingTime.org. But if you read that, he specifically addresses that. Here's the problem, because the 14th Amendment doesn't specifically spell out the procedures that can be that has to be followed when you're seeking to bar a person from public office, and because the Colorado Supreme Court's majority opinion is so messed up, other states are going to have a large problem applying this to their challenges, whatever those challenges are. The Supreme Court is going to have to step in to resolve these disputed state courts coming at inconsistent decisions. Because remember, We came out of the great white north, so I think Michigan has already shot down the same challenge.
Right.
Now you have an inconsistency of a split among the states. The Supreme Court is the final arbiter. They have to step in.
All right. We'll take the break at this point. Patrick's going to stay with us. I hope you do as well. We come back. We'll talk now about deranged Jack Smith and the big setback he suffered today at the Supreme Court, and if he should even be on the job at all. All of that with Patrick McGarrow, publisher of Undoing Time magazine. You can find them at UndoingTime.org. Please go there and subscribe. And check out his article today, Colorado Supreme Court Denies Trump Ballot Access in Unprecedented Ruling. We'll be right back.
AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer.
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you suffer with low energy, difficulty sleeping, digestive issues, frequent illnesses, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Heiss Health Clinic is for you. Hi, this is Renee Humphreys. At Heiss Health Clinic, we use holistic methods to balance your body so it can help heal itself. Call Heiss Health Clinic at 407-677-1660 or go online to drheiss.com so we can help you experience outrageous health.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're like me, you're probably spending more time in your vehicles, so it's more important than ever that we can rely on them. That's why if you have a Mercedes-Benz, you need to know Jerry and Janice Shepherd, because you can rely on Jerry's MB to keep your Mercedes in tip-top shape without leaving your budget out of shape. With their state-of-the-art facilities, factory-trained techs, decades of experience, and reasonable prices, Jerry's MB is your dealership alternative. Jerry's MB is located just off Alafaya Trail, just north of UCF. Give them a call at 407-366-6499 or visit them at jerrysandb.com. Remember, they're your dealership alternative. jerrysnb.com, 407-366-6499.
Folks, do you suffer from nagging back or neck pain? Ever wake up feeling more exhausted than the night before? And what about that sleep partner who's turning your nights into a concert of snores or dealing with breathing issues, acid reflux, or sleep apnea? Here's the game changer. Discover a better night's sleep and a better day at Relax and Comfort. We're a unique mattress store. At Relax and Comfort, we're all about elevating your sleep experience, and we've got all the top brands to prove it, including Tempur-Pedic, Personal Comfort, and Stearns and Foster. Our smart bed beds aren't just beds. They're your personalized sleep sanctuary with hundreds of healthy positions. They're designed to fit you perfectly. Plus, they have an amazing feature, automatic snore detection and response. No more sleepless nights because of a noisy partner. The best part, we're conveniently located at Winter Park Village, just across from Regal Cinemas. Come see us today and experience a night's sleep like never before. Relax in Comfort, where better sleep leads to better days. That's relaxincomfort.com or visit us in person at the Winter Park Village, just across from Regal Cinemas, a family tradition since 1967.
We all know we can't avoid death and taxes. Here in Florida, we also can't avoid mold, mildew, and grime building up on our homes, businesses, carports, and sidewalks. When it's time for you to tackle that dirt and grime, call Deere Brothers Exterior Cleaning, D-E-E-R-E. They do it all, from soft washing roofs to high-powered washing for those really tough jobs. No job too big or small. So when it comes time for you to deal with the mold, mildew, and grime, call Deere Brothers Exterior Cleaning at 407-978-8834. Leave the dirty work to them. 407-978-8834.
Get away and hide. I'd never been to visit my daddy's family side. He said they were unique, but I would call them strange. Dad said, don't touch Cousin Eddie's hair because he's got the mange.
Oh, jingle bells, Granddad smells. My cousin thinks I'm cute.
We promised you it would be unusual.
Oh, my gosh.
Hope you're enjoying it, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's go back to Patrick McGarrow, publisher of Undoing Time magazine, undoingtime.org. I thought you might appreciate that one there, Patrick.
I love it.
All right. All right, do you love this decision by the Supreme Court today? What happened?
All right, so they rejected Jack Smith's request for an expedited review of the immunity claim from Donald Trump. This is a clear victory for Donald Trump because, as we know, there is an expedited review going on right now already in the D.C. Court of Appeals. The Supreme Court is going to is not going to get involved as quickly as the special counsel hopes. They're going to let this thing lie, which may result in delaying that March 4th trial. Which is, that would also be beneficial for Trump.
Yeah, it's my understanding that Chutkan, when the appeal was taken by Smith to the Supreme Court on the immunity thing, she postponed at that point the proceedings. So, in other words, the case was not going to be moving forward until the issue was resolved. Now, can she go back on that since they pushed it back to the appellate courts?
She can certainly try, but then I think Trump's lawyers would be making a very, very, very strong argument that if she had already made the decision that this needs to be stayed pending an appellate court decision on this issue, she would be very unjustified in going back on her word by saying, oh, never mind, I didn't mean what I actually said. So, She can try to do that, but I think that would get shut down very quickly by either the D.C. Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court or both.
Now, presumably the appellate court can move as quickly as they want, but what would be a typical fast-track time frame?
Here's the cynic in me. A typical fast-track for a normal situation, of which this is clearly abnormal, would be a couple of weeks, maybe a month, depending on the circumstances. But as we know, everything with Trump is unprecedented and abnormal. So there is no telling how long the D.C. Court of Appeals is. You know, we could see something right after the new year, January 2nd. We could see something in between Christmas and the new year. I imagine if they hate his guts, which they probably do, they'll probably issue something within the next week, right after the Christmas break in between, or at least January 2nd or 3rd. And then, depending on what the decision is, Trump will take this case up to the Supreme Court, which will move at its own pace, which may require that stay to remain in place. I don't foresee the Supreme Court resolving this before March 4th.
Patrick, when you say that the appeals court would settle this within a couple of weeks, does that mean the three-person panel or the in-bank panel or both?
Generally, that's going to be the three-person panel unless they refer it to an in-bank panel immediately. Because if it comes out of a three-person panel, which I believe it's currently assigned to, then there is always the option for either party to request en banc review, which just means before every single judge in the D.C. Court of Appeals, of which there are many more than three. In that case, that will delay the final resolution of the D.C. Court of Appeals decision until that motion is decided. If the court then decides to take up en banc review, that will delay those proceedings even further. So this is not going to happen anytime soon, plain and simple.
And once it passes out of that Circuit Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court's current session ends in June. There's no guarantee it'll even get on the docket of the Supreme Court, right?
No guarantee. And if that's the case, then as the song goes, see you in September.
See you in September. All right. And then there is this other issue with deranged Jack Smith. This has to do with an amicus brief written by Ed Meese. And I'm not sure which case that he wrote it for, the amicus brief, but he is claiming that Smith is not authorized to be a special counsel because he was not an officer of the federal government when he was appointed, as is required by the statute. Who is he filing this amicus brief with? I mean, what case? And then elaborate on it, please.
Sure. When you have a special prosecutor assigned, there has to be a statutory grant of authority. So you and I cannot be prosecutors, Chris. We have no special powers granted to us by the law. If you are an elected district attorney or an elected state attorney or an appointed and confirmed U.S. attorney, then you have that ability. Anything short of that, you need some sort of legislative grant of power in the federal government that comes from Congress in the form of a specific grant of power by Congress to be active special counsel. But there, as this guy pointed out, there are requirements. I don't remember where that brief was filed, but that is one of the challenges floating around. I've seen that challenge being made before, and I've actually seen that challenge be successful because sometimes people get appointed in the heat of the moment with no legal authority, and they try to end run around the requirements of the law, and you just can't do that. We all have to follow the law, even if your name is Jack Smith.
Would him having been at one time eligible, even if he wasn't at the time, be sufficient? Because the same thing applied, by the way, to Robert Mueller when he was a special counsel going after Trump on the Russia stuff.
Exactly. No, the requirements of the law are clear. At the time of the appointment, you have to meet certain requirements. Being an active member of the federal government is one of them. I don't think Jack Smith checks all the boxes, and if he doesn't, then his authority is going to go out the window and quite possibly the indictment with it.
Okay. One last issue is the case in Atlanta having to do with Curling and Raffensperger, and this has to do with the integrity of the Atlanta election. Have there been any developments in that? Because that case is set to go to trial here in just a week or so, isn't it?
Exactly. Both sides are simply preparing for trial. No new developments, but I have a feeling there may be a settlement. Just call me crazy. There may be some sort of settlement out of court before that trial actually happens, and some significant changes in Georgia.
that that may, you know, may actually benefit the common person like you or me, and actually, you know, may count our vote properly is the way it should be.
Well,
God forbid.
Would that, however, stifle, say, Donald Trump from using evidence that may come out in this case for his defense?
No, it's not going to stifle anything. If anything, it'll probably, I have a feeling that the result of that case will be used in some form or fashion to help Donald Trump in his defense of that Georgia indictment. But again, I've said this before on the show, again, I don't think that Georgia indictment is ever going to see the light of day. I don't think that case is ever really going to be tried.
All right, well, thank you very much, Patrick, and once again, very Merry Christmas to you as well, and we'll look forward to working.
Thank you, guys. Merry Christmas to all the audience out there.
All right, you got it. All right, Patrick McGarrow, publisher, Undoing Time magazine, undoingtime.org is where you can subscribe, and as you'll see with his article about this Colorado decision, it's very thorough, and he lays it out in a way that explains it so you can understand exactly what's going on. So, undoingtime.org.